In the new book, The Fires of Spring, a post-Arab spring journey through the turbulent new Middle East, Shelley Culbertson, Middle East analyst at the RAND Corporation, looks to shed light on the Middle East after the Arab Spring. The Arab Spring began in 2010 in Tunisia when a young fruit seller lit himself on fire in protest and spread throughout the Middle East among citizens frustrated by lack of opportunities and a government that failed them. With both peaceful and violent protests, the movement demanded a better way of life. Its aftermath, however, has ranged from tentatively encouraging to halting progress for change to devastating civil wars that have resulted in challenges to the Middle Eastern borders and mass refugee crisis. Shelley Culbertson has lived, worked, and traveled extensively across the Middle East. She is currently a Middle East analyst at the RAND Corporation and has served as a U.S. Department of State Foreign Affairs Officer for Turkey. The name of the new book is The Fires of Spring, and we welcome Shelley Culbertson to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
Very nice to have you on the program. You are currently a Middle East analyst at the RAND Corporation, served as a U.S. Department of State Foreign Affairs Officer for Turkey. What brought you to this particular subject of wanting to look at these fires of spring?
Well, I had lived in the Middle East for about 10 years and was there when the Arab Spring was happening. And then its immediate aftermath seemed to be very disappointing. It looked as though the great changes desired by this inspirational movement really hadn't come to fruition. And so I wanted to investigate what had happened. And so I took a journey through six countries of the Middle East and interviewed people who had been part of the Arab Spring, whether they were the protesters, government officials, political parties, journalists, and civilians, and tried to get a better understanding of what was happening in different points of view.
One of the points that you make out in the book that the Arab Spring is not over.
Yes, I think the bottom line conclusion of the book is that the Arab Spring is actually just beginning. And I've been using the phrase Arab Spring Phase 1 and Arab Spring Phase 2, where the Arab Spring Phase 1 was really about the events of 2011 and 2013, mass protests, government overthrows, and so forth, of people recognizing what they didn't want for their society. So it was a mass rising up and objecting to the Middle East tradition of autocratic governments. But then once governments had been overthrown, there was this question of, well, what next? And so a central argument of the book is that the Middle East really is undergoing profound changes currently as the people of the region are trying to figure out what the values are that represent the region and how to translate those institutions. And so these changes may not be instant and are likely to unfold over the next generation.
Talk a little bit about the weak institutions and what we saw immediately following the original Arab Spring protests.
In the immediate aftermath were four government overthrows, in particular Tunisia, Egypt, Libya, and Yemen, and a number of protests in other countries. And then in still other countries, no protests at all. In the countries that did have government overthrows, really only Tunisia is a remaining bright spot. Tunisians got together, decided what they didn't want. Their secularist parties and Islamist parties came together, developed an institution that was trying to determine values for their society in a way that blended both secularist interests and Islamist interests and moved forward. As we see in Syria and Yemen and Libya, there are ongoing civil wars. Those are very ugly and will likely affect the Middle East for the next generation or two. And still in Egypt, it was a different story, where there was a government overthrow, a democratically elected government that then behaved autocratically, more protests, followed by a coup, and almost back to square one. So there have been a range of different experiences across the Middle East during the Arab Spring and its aftermath.
You talk an awful lot in the book about the youth, about the young people. And the statistic you cite is 70% of the Middle East is under the age of 30. So what does that mean for the hope of change and as that group inevitably grows older?
So, as you point out, the Middle East is a very young region. The the region has seen tremendous population growth from the 50s until now. It's quadrupled from that time, so that 70% is under the age of 30. And that has both risks and opportunities. The risks are that institutions, the economy, and the education systems have not kept up with the desire of this growing population for better opportunities. If the interests of the youth really are not addressed over time, we could see it really continuously failing states or even another round of Arab Spring over the future. At the same time, I think that there's a big opportunity here as well, because it was the youth largely who led many of the Arab Spring movements. And as this group matures and gains experience and comes into leadership positions in the next decade or two, those ideals will be coming with them. And in my book, I had the privilege and opportunity of interviewing a number of these people. And as they described it, they knew what they didn't want, they protested, and then now is really the day-to-day work of turning those ideas into institutions. And that will take a long time.
You also talk about the refugee crisis and how that could and will reshape the next generation in the Middle East.
Yes. Yeah, so I talk about the refugee crisis in my book, and also at RAND, that's a central area of my research, the refugee crisis in the Middle East. And it's really quite shocking. So Syria's population in particular has been, fully half of Syria's population has been displaced. There are about 23 million Syrians, and 12 million of them are displaced either internally or have fled over the borders into Turkey, Lebanon, and Jordan in particular. And what's very different and problematic about this was that this was a middle-income country where people did have education and some opportunities and so forth. And the conditions in which they're living now are really quite dire. We're seeing this overflow into Europe. And so the conditions of so many millions of people who are now living in very difficult circumstances as refugees, as well as the strain that this is placing on the neighboring countries, will be a continuing challenge for probably the next couple of decades.
And it's safe to say we don't know exactly what's going to happen. This is still very much a work in progress.
With the Arab Spring?
With the refugee crisis. I mean, this is still unfolding.
What we do know is that refugee crises are rarely short term. Some are resolved quickly, but what we see is serious civil war really is nowhere being close to being finished. And the UN has found that in protracted refugee crises, in other words, once they've passed 5 years, the average time to return home for refugees is 25 years. And so what we're dealing with is largely a very massive shift of population and demographics that's changing the Middle East. And perhaps the last time we saw such massive shifts was during World War I, when prior to World War I, most of the Middle East was essentially one country, the Ottoman Empire. And when it was split up at the dissolution of the Ottoman Empire at the end of World War I, there were similarly such massive transfers of population. So in a way, it's really a repeat of what we saw about 100 years ago.
Once you start this progress and these phases of the Arab Spring, how does ISIS fit into this? And at what point can it become a great detriment to the movement?
I think that ISIS is an important context for the Arab Spring. In a way, it could be argued that ISIS is really an outgrowth of the Arab Spring. So the Arab Spring movements were objecting to decades of autocratic government across the region. And in some cases, that turned into hopeful youth and peaceful protests. But the other extreme of that were people who looked at the governments and said, this is not delivering. Instead, they wanted to create an Islamic caliphate and are using extremely ugly violence to do so. So in a way, the ISIS is a bit of an outgrowth of some of those same sentiments, although clearly played out in very different ways. What's also interesting about what happened with ISIS in Iraq and Syria is the backdrop that this gave to other countries. So in particular, in places like Tunisia and Jordan, there were protests at the time, but as Tunisians and Jordanians looked at what had happened in Syria and Iraq and so forth, they said, we did not want this for our country. So very much diametrically opposed political parties were able to come together and make compromises, really driven by this example of what they did not want for their region.
When, in looking at the subject as a whole, and when it comes to these fires of spring, where does your optimism lie?
My optimism lies in several places. First, I think that there's very profound changes happening in the Middle East. While the immediate aftermath has not seen the kinds of changes that would have been desired instantly, I think in large part because the institutions were not in place to support that. In the longer term, you do see movements towards some of those goals. One really interesting parallel, I think, are the set of revolutions in Europe in 1848, also ironically called the Springtime of the Nations. And at the time, they were instantly quelled. But when historians look back at these protests, which were had many similar goals to what we see in the Arab Spring currently, they look at this as really a precursor for setting down values that led to civil rights and human rights and economic changes in Europe and so forth. So I think that there are historical precedents along those lines. Another point of optimism is what's happened in several different countries. And I think Tunisia in particular is a good example of that. They overthrew the government. They knew what they didn't want. And they created essentially a new social contract for their society through a new constitution. And while it hasn't been smooth sailing entirely since then, political parties are participating by democratic rules of the game. Women are taking greater roles and so forth. So there are other examples along these lines that show that in the longer run, I think that there is very much hope for the region.
The name of the book is The Fires of Spring. It is published by St. Martin's Press. Shelley Culbertson, thank you very much for sharing with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book is The Fires of Spring, A Post-Arab Spring Journey Through the Turbulent New Middle East. The book is published by St. Martin's Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.